This episode of the Memory Palace is brought to you by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMeo. The thing about the Titanic, he just made that up. There is no Alvin Kelly on the ship's logs. But who can say about the other sinking ships? The other maritime disasters he claimed to have survived. The ones he said earned him the nickname Shipwreck Kelly. But why should the truth get in the way of an all-time nickname like Shipwreck Kelly? And besides, if you saw him do his thing, that thing that made his name, made it one of the most famous names in America for a time. If you saw him shimmy up a flagpole, no tools, no harness, like it was nothing, up and up 100 feet, two, in some town square or some traffic circle, up and up, all the way to the top. He certainly looked like a sailor. You could just picture him climbing up a mast, swinging from the rigging. See him up in the crow's nest, keeping watch for sails or whales or icebergs. And then when he stood up on top of that flagpole, which was in no way made for standing on, and then casually smiled and waved and maybe did a little dance, you could believe this was a man who could have survived any number of shipwrecks. That kind of strength, that kind of balance, that diem carpeing joie de vivre. Shipwreck Kelly, the name just fit. But it was what happened next, what always happened next, when he'd sit down there on the top of that flagpole. And then, well, that was it. That was the whole bit. He'd just sit and sit and sit. That was what made him famous. For nearly a decade, Alvin Shipwreck Kelly was one of America's biggest celebrities as the inventor, popularizer, and certainly master of the art of flagpole sitting. It all started in January of 1924 in Hollywood when he was hired by a movie theater to drum up publicity for an upcoming release. They paid Kelly, then a part-time stuntman, to sit atop a flagpole in front of the marquee for as long as he could, which turned out to be 13 hours. Crowds loved it. And soon he was traveling all across the United States, making as much as $500 a day to sit on a tiny platform on top of a giant flagpole. And those days piled up. He spent 80 hours on top of a pole in front of a New Orleans hotel, 146 hours on top of a pole that was itself on top of an 11-story Kansas City hotel, 312 hours on top of another pole on top of another hotel in Newark that drew crowds in the hundreds, day after day. They'd even come out in the rain, because it was all the more marvelous in the rain to see that man up there in the sky and wonder at how he could stay up there all that time. Many were inspired to try. There were copycats and wannabes. Flagpole sitting contests popped up like, I don't know, flagpoles. So many people there in the 1920s wanted to try and climb as high as Shipwreck Kelly. It was an era of fads and crazes, when stunts like Kelly's were seen as viable routes to rising above one's station. And who could blame people? The mass media, still brand new then, was anointing sudden celebrities all the time. If you and an inordinate number of friends or frat brothers could squeeze into a car or a phone booth, you could find yourselves in the paper. If you could stay on your feet at one of the hundreds of dance marathons that swept the country, then you could win real money. Walking contests, bicycling contests, all manner of feats of endurance that were often seen as demonstrating a certain can-do American spirit, but perhaps were better at demonstrating what Americans were willing to endure to make their lives that little bit better. But in all of this, the feats of endurance and fame democratized, Shipwreck Kelly sat at the top. Literally, at least once, when he sat for 22 days on a pole in Madison Square Garden in the center of a dance floor during a dance marathon. Just sat. Sometimes he'd read the paper or shave, and whew, fans loved that. Didn't eat much. People would hoist up cups of broth in a bucket. He was on a liquid diet for the sake of convenience and propriety. At night, he would tie his ankles to the pole and stick his fingers into holes he'd drill into the top to keep from falling in his sleep. But a lot of nights he couldn't sleep at all. With the rain or the wind or the cold. With people shouting up at him from the crowd. There was always a crowd. 20,000 people came to see him climb up a pole above the pier in Atlantic City in June of 1930. Who knows how many stuck around as the hours went on, or how many came back the next weekend to find that Kelly was still there. They had done a whole week of work, went to the office or the factory, they rode on trolleys, they'd eaten dinner and played ball in the yard with their kids, they'd hung laundry out in the line, and Shipwreck Kelly was still there. Just sitting. Just a man on a flagpole. On a perfect summer day by the Jersey shore. His signature sailor cap, a white dot against the blue sky. Hardly a cloud. Seagulls circling. The sound of the surf rolling in. Kids testing the edge of the water. A band, high brass, snare drum, rising up from the dance hall on the boardwalk. Picture him up there, on top of that pole. And while he's up there, let's talk about the man. The true story of his life before he got famous. We have plenty of time. He isn't going anywhere. Alvin Kelly was orphaned on the day he was born. His mother died in childbirth. And just a few months earlier, his father had died. From a fall, of all things. He was working construction and a coworker hit some wrong lever that swung a crane wrong and somehow Mr. Kelly got knocked off. And then that coworker, out of his guilt, adopted Alvin and tried to raise him, but as soon as the kid turned 13, he took off and went to sea. Worked on boats, and maybe some of those boats really sank. Even if none of those boats was the Titanic, maybe there was something to the stories he told about himself. But the real story of his nickname, it seems, was that he boxed for a while, under the name Sailor Kelly. But he wasn't very good at boxing, and he kept getting knocked flat. And people started calling him Shipwreck Kelly. But it is quite a thing, to not just keep climbing back into the ring after people give you an insulting nickname, but to embrace that nickname, and claim it, and reframe it, and start climbing. Finding a weird thing that you are so weirdly good at, that you get to live a life you could have never imagined. He didn't invent sitting on tall things. And though he would set a record there on that flagpole above New Jersey, 49 days without touching the ground, he had nothing in the Stylites, the various religious ascetics who took to living atop pillars on and off for a thousand years ago, some for decades at a time, seeking a greater connection to God. And maybe fame, maybe a few $100 a day, isn't exactly the highest calling, so to speak. But there is something like devotion here, something that goes beyond mere effort, beyond the requisite strength and the balance. There was an ability to endure. There was suffering, real suffering. There was merely being alone, being with oneself in the elements for all those hours and all those days, looking down on the city and the sea, on the people making their way through their days in their various ways. Well, he was just up there sitting. There was something more than will. Wouldn't there have to be? To push him on for 49 days? Through it all, the aches and boredom, the wandering mind, like a monk on a mountaintop. Were there moments that felt like transcendence? Wouldn't there have to be? But I digress. Those 49 days over Atlantic City in the summer of 1930 would be his longest stint on a pole. I do wonder if he knew it when he came down, to tremendous applause and solid food. I wonder if we ever really know when we've done the biggest thing we're ever going to do. He would climb other poles, off and on for years after, but nothing would come close to that achievement or that acclaim. In the winter of 1934, a reporter for the Associated Press found him in a bow tie and tails in a ballroom in Manhattan, where women would pay a dime to have a dance with men who knew their way around the floor. He was in particular demand. He knew all the steps except the foxtrot, and he was Shipwreck Kelly. For 10 cents, they didn't just get a dance, they got a story to tell. And for $10, he wasn't ashamed to say, they could take him home. The story he told reporters that night is that the stock market crash in 29 doomed the flagpole sitting industry. Businesses didn't have the money to pay him, And then the cops were so worried about unrest and riots and socialist uprisings there in the depths of the Depression that no city wanted big crowds anymore. They kept shutting him down. One time, police even threatened to chop him down if he didn't return to Earth voluntarily. He figured things would pick up again when the weather got better. But they never really did. Kelly spent World War II at sea. He was too old for the Navy, so he joined the Merchant Marines. At some point, he got married to an elevator operator. And there is a certain poetry in that. They had a son who grew up to join the circus, but he got killed by an Asian elephant. It threw him up in the air and then stomped on him in front of a tent full of people in 1973. It made national news. Kelly himself had died years before, and it too made national news. He collapsed in the street in Manhattan. He'd been living in a boarding house nearby. This is October of 52. The police report said he was 67, but if you believe Kelly's claims about his birthday, he was only 59. The obituary in the New York Times lamented the distance between his humble end and the literal and figurative heights he'd reached a couple of decades before. And made mention, too, of a few things the police had found that belonged to Kelly. In his apartment, they found the length of rope he would use to tie his ankles to the pole when he slept. It was wrapped up and ready to go, as though he thought he would be called back to climb a pole again at any moment. And there was a book. It had been tucked under his arm when he was found in the sidewalk. Inside were photographs and newspaper clippings, chronicling his odd career in the sky. And there were statistics. He was telling his own story until the end. While pursuing his life's work, he had tallied 20,613 total hours atop flagpoles, including 47 spent while snow was falling, 1,400 while rain was falling, and 210 when the temperature had fallen below freezing. And on the outside of the book was a title. It was called The Luckiest Fool in the World. This episode of The Memory Palace is written and produced by me, Nate DeMeo. I get research assistance from Eliza McGraw and engineering assistance from Elizabeth Aubert. This show is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent podcasts helping each other chart our own courses through an increasingly bonkers media landscape. You can learn more about Radiotopia at radiotopia.fm. If you're new to the show, there are a ton of old episodes at thememorypalace.us. Just dive in and poke around. And if you do like what you hear, do take a minute out to share the show and help others find it. I'm going to be performing some live shows in September and early October of 2019, so just coming up if you are listening to this story just as it drops. It's Brooklyn, Philly, Rochester, New York, St. Louis, Chicago, and Salt Lake City have all been announced as of this taping. You can find ticket links to those and any other shows at thememorypalace.us/events. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at The Memory Palace. And you can always write me a note via nate@thememorypalace.us. I'll be back with another new episode in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia. From PRX.